morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Or good afternoon, rather. I'm sorry I wasn't here earlier. Had a little bit of a delay, but my name is Karina Black, and I'm also a user experience designer on the Windows Phone design team. I've worked on a variety of products while at Microsoft, including the Windows Phone developer tools, and I'm really excited to be able to demo some of those today. I'm curious, before I get started, because I'm going to show a lot of Blend, because of course this is really about design. How many of you, I know there are a lot of developers in the audience, how many of you, by a show of hands, have used Blend? Okay, not a lot. So I think this will definitely be interesting. I'm going to start out by talking about refinement best practices, things that you need to keep in mind when developing your applications to make sure that they're great user experiences. Did you show Meal Nirvana? Very, very quickly. Do it again. Oh, I can skip it? Okay, I was gonna show Meal Nirvana. Arturo has already showed Meal Nirvana. Just to kind of highlight, you know, some like applications that are not necessarily well designed. Good conceptually, there are, you know, it's solving a real user problem, but there are some things that that developer can circle back and address to make the experience much better, as you probably saw. So I won't show that. Then I'm just going to very quickly talk about what makes for a well-designed phone application. Then I'm going to dive into 9 best practices. There are many more. 9 will fit in the time that we're allotted that you should keep in mind when you're designing your applications to make sure your experiences are really great. So with that, again, I was going to show Meal Nirvana. I'm not going to do that. You all saw it. You saw some of the user experience issues. It didn't necessarily look as good as it could. It had a lot of potential. Many phone applications are not extremely well designed. Lots of potential. They could, again, circle back and address many of the user experience issues to make things a heck of a lot better. So what does make for well-designed Windows Phone applications? They're useful, usable, and desirable. With respect to useful, do they solve a real user problem? As you saw in the case of Meal Nirvana, it does solve a real user problem. Imagine you're out with friends, you have this application on your phone, you can quickly find a restaurant near your current location that meets certain criteria or requirements, and go have a great dinner, lunch, breakfast with your friends. Solving a nice problem also allows you to track your expenses at restaurants, and it has a nice tip calculator as well. An application that maybe makes strange noises, I don't know, like farts, I don't know if you know what that means, but probably not, you know, something that's really useful. It's not solving a real user problem. Fun, but nonetheless not solving a real user problem. So I like images to kind of drive home points. This obviously is not an application. This is a photo of a car with no wheels. Clearly, it's not solving a user problem because it's not going to take you anywhere. It's actually causing a problem in that it's probably messing up your parking lot or your driveway or whatever it may be. So the next principle, or the next thing that is important to well-designed applications is the usability aspects of that experience. It shouldn't crash, it should be performant, it should load quickly and feel nice and snappy. It shouldn't require a user manual to figure out how the application works. It should be intuitive. You should instantly know how to interact with the experience and flow through the experience as well. One last thing, the content, the information in these types of applications is appropriate for the user and very meaningful for the user as well. Again, I like images. Although this teapot looks nice, it's quite the opposite of usable. Imagine pouring tea out of this. You're probably going to get a hefty burn. Not something you probably want, not a good experience. So then the last thing that I want to talk about is the desirability qualities of an application. This is what really takes your experience to the next level. It captures users' imaginations, gets them excited about using your applications. draws them in. It could be colors, it could be images, it could be animations and transitions that are incorporated into the application that really resonate with users. It's also, these applications for the phone are also going to take advantage of the hardware. For instance, the accelerometer and the GPS, as in the case of Mule Nirvana, it's taking advantage of the GPS capabilities of the phone. They're also going to fully embrace the Metro design language and feel like a holistic part of the overall Windows Phone experience. One last image. Again, the opposite of desirable. A home, just it looks a little bit messy, probably something that many of us in the room would not want. So I'm going to go ahead and let's just dive into the 9 best practices that we're going to talk about today. Again, there are many, many more to keep in mind when designing your experiences. And I have an application that we're going to use throughout the rest of this, probably next 40 minutes, 30 minutes maybe, it's in a not so well-designed state, and we're going to look at each of these best practices and improve that experience, and in the end, it will be a much better experience for users. So we're going to look at real examples, and I'm going to give you a brief tour of the application before I begin in its current state. All right, so this is the first page of the application. It's using a panorama to contain all of the content. What it is a weather application. The idea is it would use GPS to provide weather, 5-day forecast, current weather for the day for the location that you're currently at. It would also provide alert information, weather alerts, like a huge rainstorm like it was last night, for the area that you're in. And you could drill into more details for one of these alerts. Don't know what happened there. So you can see there are a lot of problems with this, just what you saw right now. We're going to fix all of these issues. The last part of this application, just so we have context, that I want to talk about is it also shows images for your current location. In the case of Barcelona, I've never been here before. Clearly one heck of an amazing place. I would love to see images of the location just to give me a better perspective of what it's like here and maybe make me more excited about exploring certain areas. Even in the case of Seattle, where I live, I would like to see images. I like to see images of Seattle. So it's just the whole experience is really a weather consumption experience. And you can actually see the full-fledged images in here as well. And you could send comments, because I'm pulling this information from Flickr, to the owner of these images, if you like. So just a little brief introduction to the application that we're going to fix. As you can see, it needs fixing, using the best practices that we're going to talk about today. The first of which is embrace typography and use font weight and size to convey hierarchy. And I know Arturo talked about this. It's very important, obviously, in the Metro design language and in our native application experiences, as well as many third-party experiences. Working hand in hand with embracing typography, celebrating typography, are the principles that Arturo talked about of authentically digital and content not Chrome. Information displayed or presented in many of these phone applications or just applications in general are textual information, it's content. Why decorate the information unnecessarily with gradients and Chrome and graphics? That's not to say that you can't incorporate graphics. It just means that you should really think about your incorporation of those graphics and, you know, visual elements. Celebrate typography, though. It can make the experience really useful and very beautiful at the same time. So we're going to take the application that I just showed you and go into Blend, and I'm going to make it celebrate typography as you're seeing on screen now a bit more. Shut this. All right, so this is Expression Blend. I know a lot of you haven't worked with it. I'm going to move quickly while working in Expression Blend at this point in time. I'll go more in depth later, So forgive me for moving so quickly. I really want to highlight some of these best practices, though, so I'm going to need to do that. So we're going to take the elements in this weather information that's presented here. It's contained in a list box. And I have a data template that I've created, which allows me to style the information in that list box differently. Again, we're going to celebrate topography a bit more. And I'm going to apply that data template. And it's going to be very quick. So I'm going to right-click on the list box. I'm choosing Edit Additional Templates. I'm going into the item template, and I'm going to apply a resource that I've already created. It's this one right here, the local weather item template. Instantly, the information changes, and it's moving in the right direction, looking much better. Let's take a quick look at the data template just to give you a little more context on what's going on here. So again, I right-clicked, Edit Additional Templates. I'm looking at the item template, and now I'm going to edit that item template. And as you can see in my Objects and Timeline tool window, it's very simple. There's a stack panel. It contains this animation behavior that I've created to have the information roll in when it loads. There's another stack panel with a few text blocks, as you can see. And an additional stack panel that contains the day and the high and the low temperature, as well as that line that you're seeing. It's as simple as that. Very simple data template. I'm going to step back up to mainpage.xaml out of my data template, and I'm going to fix the alerts list. We're going to make this celebrate topography a bit more. Again, I have a data template that I'm going to use. So I'm going to right-click on my list box, Edit Additional Templates, going into the item template, and I'm going to apply the resource that I've created, which is this alerts item template. You'll see that things instantly look different. I want to make two columns of information, so I'm going to do one more thing. I'm going to change the item container style to a wrap panel, which is in the toolkit, which will allow me to have two columns of information. And I'll show you that template as well, but I'm going to apply it because I've already prepared it. For that, I right-click on the alerts list box, edit additional templates. I'm selecting the items panel, and I'm going to apply my resource, my item template panel. Instantly, we see two columns of information. And let's just take a quick look at that data template. So I'm going to edit the current template. And I'm going to do a split view so we can see the XAML and the design at the same time. I often work this way. I'm going to try not to so you can see the design as much as possible, but I want to show you the XAML real quickly. So as you can see, it's just the item template, and it simply contains a wrap panel. That's what I've applied. So now I'm going to step back up, and let's just quickly run the application, and we'll see it's looking much better. It's definitely celebrating topography quite a bit more than it was previously.
Corina?
Yes.
Let me just say something real quick. Una cuestión acerca de los retos, para que puedan poner atención a la sesión, vamos a cambiar la hora de entrega de la historia a regresando de la comida, para que puedan poner atención a Corina. Y del mood board también, así que no se preocupen, ¿sale?
Okay. Okay, it's all good. All right, you didn't say anything bad about me. Okay. So as you can see, it's definitely celebrating topography. I mean, we're embracing topography in this experience. It's actually more usable. You can see right away what the current weather conditions are. You know, today it's clear. Boom, you see it. It's clear. I'm also incorporating additional information on the back-end code. If the temperature is in a certain range, I'm coloring the text a certain way. And another range, I'm coloring the text in a different way. So not only can you see the weather, but you can also get a really instant idea of what the temperature is like as well. And then if we look at the alerts information, it's a lot more. There's a lot more information presented. I can scan this page and see the various alerts instantly for my particular area that I'm in. More usable and more beautiful. So the next best practice, and again, I know Arturo talked a lot about this, is use a grid system to guide layout of your interface elements. This is really like the principle of clean, light, open, and fast really has to do with using this grid, these grid systems. It will make sure that your interface is clean, things are nicely aligned. It will make it easier to take advantage of negative space, that white space or that empty space in your application experience. When you do that, it's also easier for users to quickly identify on the screen what they really need to pay attention to. So it's making it more usable. Let's take a look at how we can use a grid to better align our current application that we were just looking at in Blend again. So, down at the bottom, I have a grid exactly like what you saw on screen just a minute ago, exactly like what Arturo discussed earlier today. I have it collapsed. I'm going to go over to my properties window and I'm going to set it to visible. And I'm going to duplicate it to make it a bit more visible. So now we can clearly see the grid, and we can see that the titles for our alert information are not aligning nicely with the content below. It's very easy to instantly see that just things are not aligning properly. They're not really holding together. They look a little bit messy. It makes me uncomfortable when I see things like this, and the grid system even makes it more apparent. So using this grid system, I'm going to apply a data template. I'll show you more in depth when I do the build session, how you can use this to quickly tweak the data template to make things align nicely. So let's take a look at our weather information. Again, you can see that things are not aligning nicely at left. And the day and the high and low temperature information just doesn't really feel like it's fitting with the actual weather information. It should feel more like a unit. So I'm going to quickly, again, apply a data template to make it feel a lot better, align a lot better. Right-clicking, edit additional templates. I'm going to look at the item template, and I'm going to apply this local weather B item template that I've created. And I'm just going to quickly undo it with a Control Z so you can see the difference. Whoops, maybe. So I've undone it. And I'm going to Control Y to apply that template again. You can see that things feel like the information is chunked better because it's more closely in relation to all the elements that are associated are more closely in relation to one another. And the alignment is more precise and aligned to the grid. Let's do the same thing to our alerts. Again, edit additional templates. Our item template, I'm going to apply this local weather B item template. And things, that's not the one that I wanted. Let's do that one more time. I want the alerts B, not the weather, because I don't have the right information in there. Again, let me undo it. Control Z. Control Z again. And then I'm going to apply it. It just feels much better, things more nicely align. And when I turn the grid off, you'll see what I mean even more. So I'm just gonna, again, collapse my grid. I'll go ahead and delete this extra one. Run the application. And we'll just take a quick look at it. And then I have one more point that I wanna make about grids, the importance of grids. Okay, we're not going to get any data right now for some reason. Oh, I lost my internet connection. All right, that's okay. Let's go ahead and go back to the presentation. And like I said, I want to talk a little bit more about the value of grids. So what we're looking at here is a bank teller interface. On the left, all of the buttons in this interface are nicely aligned. On the right, one button is simply askew. A man named Noam Trichtinsky at Ben-Gurion University ran users through a series of usability tasks using both of these interfaces. The one that's more precisely aligned tested far better. Just simply one button is askew, and it harms the usability of this interface. So grids can not only make your experience align more closely with the Metro design language, the overall aesthetic of our Windows Phone 7 experiences, not only make it look good, but it can actually improve the usability of your experiences. So it really is important to consider. So the next thing, and I think it's going to run here in a moment, is we're looking at the turnstile animation. I think Arturo showed this as well. I believe he did. Use animations and transitions and effects to both guide and delight your users. They can help your users understand how to interact with the interface and make them much more happy when experiencing those interfaces. So we're going to quickly apply some animations for page turning and a tilt animation for when items actually will navigate you to an additional page. This animation that we're seeing here, that's going to run over here, when I click on something that navigates me to a new page, you'll see a tilt effect. Making it more intuitive for users, they're going to know that when they press on something and it tilts, it's going to navigate them to a new page. And the transition just feels better and aligns more nicely with Windows Phone. So let me see if I can get internet connectivity back. It looks like I'm back up. Okay. So this time, and I do this, I have to admit, I myself work kind of interchangeably between Expression Blend and Visual Studio. Whenever I'm kind of a hybrid, I do both development and design. When I'm doing development tasks or tasks where I'm messing with a lot of XAML, I'll do it in Visual Studio. Design, I strictly do in Expression Blend. It's so much easier. But now I'm going to work in Visual Studio to apply toolkit animations that we just talked about. These are available off of CodePlex, for those of you who don't already know, and it's in the Windows Phone toolkit. So the first thing that I need to do is, if I hadn't already done this, is I would need to install the toolkit, and then I would need to make a reference to the Windows Phone toolkit. I've already done that in my application or in my project. Next, I need to go to app.xaml. I'm going to take advantage of those page turning navigations, that, or those turnstile page change animations that we just saw. And to do that, I need to change the frame to the transition frame that you find in the toolkit. I go into app.xaml.cs to do that. I go down to the bottom where we find the root frame for our application. I have it commented out here. I'm simply going to uncomment it and then comment out the current phone application frame. Save it. Now I'm going to go to my main page.xaml. And I already have a reference to the toolkit because, as you saw, we were using that wrap panel that I had incorporated to make sure that I could have two columns of information in my alerts page. That's in the toolkit. So if I hadn't done that, I would need to make a reference to the toolkit namespace. I've already done that, so I don't need to do that again. I'm going to use a snippet to incorporate the page transitions just to make it work faster. And this is the XAML right here that I've added. It does, when I'm transitioning in, if I'm backing into the page, you're going to see that turnstile navigation. If I'm forwarding out or backwarding out of the page, you're also going to see the turnstile animation. And this will make more sense when I actually show it running. Let's do that now to our alerts details page and our image details page as well. This time I don't have a reference to the namespace, so I'm going to add that. Done that by inserting it using my snippets right here. I'm going to do that to my image details as well. Double click on my snippet. Then I'm basically going to incorporate the exact same XAML that we saw on main page.xaml. It's this right here that we're looking at that will enable those transitions. Let's do the same here on our alert details page. And I've incorporated it. Now I'm ready to go with my page transitions. The last thing I want to do before I run the application is I want to incorporate the tilt effect on the alerts list box and the images list box, because they navigate you to a new page to help users quickly intuit when you see that tilt effect is going to navigate you to a new page. I need to apply that in mainpage.xaml. I'm going to go down to the alerts list box, which is right here. And I'm going to type toolkit. I'm going to choose the tilt effect. Is tilt enabled? True. Then I'm going to copy and paste that XAML down into the list box for my image list, which is right here. Paste that in place. I'm ready to go. So I'm going to save all of this, name the solution, and I'm going to go back to Expression Blend and run it. Hitting F5. It's loading. Okay. All right. So, as you can see, when I press on high wind, you'll see the tilt effect. Do that again. You see the nice turnstile page transition. When I click the back button, you see the nice transition. Ignore that animation that just ran. We'll fix that later. I'm going to do the same thing on images. Nice transition effect. Feeling more in line with Windows Phone, and it's a lot more engaging, a lot more fun. Very easy to do using the toolkit animations and transitions. We'll look more at that in the build session. All right. So the next best practice, you really need to design with themes in mind and take advantage of theme.resources, the theme resources that we provide for you. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. So as Arturo, I believe, mentioned, users can change certain aspects of the experience. They can change the background color from white to black in their applications, and they can also choose an accent color. Users like it when you respect their preferences. There are cases where, because maybe for branding reasons, you want to fix the colors. If you do that, you need to test your application on the various, you know, possible with the various possible user settings to make sure that it's still usable. I would recommend hard coding all of the colors if you're going to go ahead and hard code any of them, or just thoroughly test, because you can run into problems, as you'll see. So let's just take a look at both approaches in, again, Expression Blend. Okay, so in Expression Blend, I don't have to run my application to check out the various user settings or themes that they can make. I can use this Devices tab that I have my mouse over right now to do those explorations. So currently I'm on the dark theme, as you can see in the tooltip. I'm going to go to the light theme. And instantly my application becomes a little bit unusable. Clearly I have a problem. If you look at the alert details page, there's an even bigger problem. It looks like there's no information there. Totally unusable. Very easy to fix. Again, I'm just going to hard code all of the colors across the board. In this case, I'm going to hard code the background color on my layout root grid for this particular page, because I haven't done that yet. To do that, I'm going to go over to the property grid, the brushes panel. I'm going to choose brush resources, and I've created a series of color resources for my application, and I'm going to choose my custom background color. And as soon as I do that, the page is usable again. I'm going to do the same thing on mainpage.xaml. This time, I could apply it to layout root, but I'm just going to apply that background color to my panorama itself. Again, over in the brushes panel, I'm choosing my custom background color brush. And I'm on the white background theme. Of course, I have a black background because I've chose to hard code all of the colors. It's at least usable, and maybe for, again, for branding reasons, this makes sense for my particular application. Again, in this case, it's probably not necessary to hard code all of the colors. And it would really benefit users if I respected their preferences. So I'm going to show you how to utilize theme.resources to respect their preferences by binding to the colors that are available in those resources. You can look at the Microsoft SDK toolkit folder to see all of the resources for the various color themes available. You can just navigate to that, you know, in the struct folder structure in Windows. Blend makes it very easy to leverage these theme resources, so that's what I'm going to show you now, is how easy it is to do using Blend. I'm going to go to my Resources tab, and I'm going to look at my resource dictionary. Then I'm just simply going to click on each of these colors and bind them to the system color resources. So the Color Resources tab is what I'm selecting, and I see my system color resources. I'm editing my foreground color, so I'm going to select the system color resource for foreground color. My information suddenly disappears. It will be fixed in a moment. I'm going to choose my background color and basically do the same. So phone background color. I have a subtle color that we'll see elsewhere, possibly, that I'm using for small text. I'm just going to bind to the system subtle color. Then I'm going to last bind to the system accent color. And if I go to this, I'm going to undo it. Or actually, I'm not going to be able to undo it. Anyway, the color changed. I've bound all of my colors in my application now to the system resources, and I'll go ahead and switch the various themes and the backgrounds using Blend, and you can see that everything is working well, and I'm respecting user preferences, so everybody's happy. So I'm going to the dark theme. Everything's looking good. I'm going to change my accent color. My favorite is magenta, so I would pick something like magenta. I, as a user, am very happy. And the creator of this application is happy as well. No reason to brand this particular experience. Okay. So Arturo talked a lot about this because I did understand him. I'm going to move really quickly. It is important to understand when to use Panorama and when to use Pivot. These two images that you're looking at here are from an application called Cocktail Flow. They use Panorama and Pivot very nicely in their experience. That's why I have these images here. But let's just get into the details. So Panorama is, as Arturo said, expansive, encourages exploration. Think magazine cover. You usually find these at the introductory level in an application because they're intended to draw the user in. There is no status information. We do this by default. Like, we actually recommend this. If you use the project templates that we have in Blend, the status bar is turned off, as is the application bar. And that is what we recommend, if that makes sense, if you can do that in your experience. If you do need to use an application bar, of course, you're gonna want to leverage it. We do have a new minimized application bar that I'm showing over under the golfer over there. That you can take advantage of and show your commands in the pop-up menu that would appear. A couple more things very quickly. We recommend no more than 5 Panorama items in your experience, just so users don't get lost. This, again, is a magazine cover type experience. You want to keep it manageable for users, the number of items. A better recommendation is probably no more than 3 panorama items, because the information, the control itself doesn't virtualize the information. For you developers in the audience, I mean, I'm sure you know exactly what I'm talking about. All pages are in memory, and if you have a lot of content in all of those pages, it could harm your performance. So I'm showing that in these bottom images down here. You're on page 0, page 1, 2, negative 1, and negative 2 are all in memory. Could pose a problem for your particular user experience. All right, so Pivot. Pivot is intended to be used for focused information. You see it in our Outlook experiences, in our native application, or native application Outlook. We do have the status bar if you use our project templates on by default. It also, I forgot to mention with Panorama, by By default, it will not respond to orientation changes. The reason is it actually is intended to be used at the vertical orientation. It's just a much better experience. So that's what we recommend. Pivot, on the other hand, can be used with both orientations. Clearly, it works very nicely in the vertical orientation. Application bar 100% makes sense. We recommend no more than 7 pivot items. Again, so users don't get lost. You can do more, but users could potentially get lost in your experiences, and maybe you should think about the overall flow and kind of reconsider how it's working if you need more than 7. One last thing, pivot is virtualized. So as the image on the bottom shows, I'm on page 0. 1 and -1 are in memory, 2 and -2 are not until they need to be. So it could be maybe potentially a little more performant, just something to consider when you're creating your applications. I'll move through this quickly. This is just important to mention, that's why I'm mentioning it here. Remember, back means back, not forward, not sideways, but back. In Windows Phone, back does 2 things. It dismisses transient UI, such as alerts or the keypad, and it actually takes the user back to the previous page that they were on. It doesn't navigate the user forward when they click back, or to maybe a home page or some other random page. It doesn't drastically change the content on the current page. And in not doing that, it is very predictable for users, providing a great user experience. Arturo mentioned this. We have a hub and spoke model. The user starts on the start panel. They go to an application, start page. They go to an application. They navigate to pages 1, 2, 3, 4. They click the back button. They go to 3, 2, 1, back to the main page of the application. They click back again. They go back to the start page. Again, very predictable, and we highly recommend that you follow our model. I want to show the model, so I'm going to run over here. Thank you. With a demo phone, so actually I might be able to, sorry, turn this on maybe? If not, I can actually talk to it. I'm going to walk back over this way. I can show you guys later.
Can we change?
That's, all right, we got it. Okay. So I'm just going to show you the experience. It is really important. Again, you want the experiences to be predictable for users. We have a hardware back button. We really want it to be used in a predictable manner so users are happy. And then in the end, you're happy as well because your experiences potentially make more money. Everybody's happy. So we're just going to look at our people tile. I had a start page tile. I navigate in, let's say I look at work, I navigate into one of these contacts, I go a little bit deeper, let's see, maybe I look at one of the Facebook posts, now I'm going to click the back button, back again. Model is very predictable. Like I said, when I click the back button, I go back. One of the cool things that you can do in Mango, very cool, is you can create a deep link tile. Let's see, is this going to work for me? Actually, you can pin a deep link tile, maybe to a particular contact. You can take advantage of this in your applications as well, so that users can navigate directly from the start page to this particular person's contact information. Again, let's say that I look at, again, a Facebook comment. When I click back, I am navigated in a very consistent manner back. Whoops. Now I went back too far. Back. It's just consistent. So, I don't know where I am. All right, I'm done. I'm going back. Can we switch back over to the other monitor? Thank you very much. So we recommend that you follow our model. I'm bringing this up because we have heard from developers that, you know, now that we have these deep link tiles, what if, you know, my user, let's say I have a shopping application, they create a deep link into my application, maybe to a wish list or, you know, maybe a shopping cart, that tile's on the page, it's going to take them directly to that wish list or shopping cart. What if they want to explore some more, is, you know, developers are thinking. Totally fine. As you saw when I deep linked to the contact information, I could still explore that contact. I could look at their Twitter feeds, their Facebook, you know, their Facebook information, maybe some images. But when I clicked the back button, it was very consistent and predictable. I always went back. We really want you to follow our model. Okay, having said that, there are instances in Mango you can manipulate the back stack. There are instances where you might want to improve the experience for your users by manipulating the back stack. So in this case, as I had just mentioned, maybe I am a shopping application and my user has created a deep link tile into my wish list in my application on my start page. When they click the tile, they enter directly into the wish list. Let's say that they want to buy that item that they've been thinking about for a while. They could click buy. They're going to fill in the billing details. Next, they're going to fill in the credit card details. And once they've done that and submitted, they're done. When they click back, you might want to take them directly back to the wish list. The credit and billing information is really kind of dead information, not interesting. So you may want to improve this scenario by removing those pages from the back stack. I'm not going to show the other two images that I have, but I think the concept, I hope the concept's clear. If you have questions, just ask me later. Just some other examples, no need to look at. Okay, so the next item is place transient UI in pop-ups, or make sure that they don't appear or interfere with back navigation. As you saw in my application, whenever I clicked the back button, you saw that opening animation run again. Not really a good experience. You might encounter problems with like login UI as well. Maybe you have your users log in when they enter your application. You don't want that to appear again in the back stack. So you just want to pay attention to that and make sure that you remove it. Let's just quickly look at this, improve this in our application experience. So to do that, and I'm going to move quickly. So right here is where I have my these are my animation elements in this grid here. And my animation, let me close these toolkit page transitions. My animation is defined right here in these phone application page.resources. This is what I want to manipulate. I'm going to place this in a pop-up. And again, I'm going to use snippets just to move a little bit faster. Oops. So I'm adding a pop-up, wrapping it around that grid that contained that animation. Close my pop-up. And now my animation information is in a pop-up. The next thing I want to do, I have that animation running. As soon as I navigate to this page, I'm going to stop the animation and close the pop-up after the animation is completed so we don't see it again. It's as straightforward as that. In this particular scenario, you might have other issues, but this is one way to handle it. So I'm going to go into mainpage.xaml. So when I navigate to a page, I'm running the opening animation. I have an event to capture the animation or to notify me when the animation is complete. So I'm going to go down here, and my pop-up is called pup is open. I'm just simply going to set it to false. And now when I run my application, you'll no longer see that that animation run. It's just going to feel like a much better experience. It's loading. Okay, so that's the opening animation. That's what we've just hidden so that we don't see it when we click the back button. My alerts are loading. Okay, my images are trying to load. I'm just going to click on one of these. It's going to navigate me to a page with nothing because I didn't let my images load. But when I click the back button, you no longer see that animation. Again, the same would apply to maybe login UI, something to keep in mind just to create a better experience for your users. All right, where am I? Okay. So next, you want to persist the state of your application. I'm just going to show you a very quick example. We could go much deeper. If you have questions afterwards, please come ask me, or I can give you some blog posts where you can learn a little bit more. Again, this is a very simple example, but the point is, it's very important to persist information for users, and we'll look at a scenario right now that will help make this point even more clear. So in our application, this may seem trivial, I realize that. We're able to, like I had mentioned, send feedback or comments to the owners of those images on Flickr. Let's say that I decided I wanted to send, you know, a hello, a hi, to this particular owner of this photo. Maybe I changed my mind, you know, I go back. Then I'm like, no, actually I did want to send that information to this person. So I click it open again. As a user, I really would expect that text that I entered to still be there. I would like you to persist that for me, especially if I entered a lot of information. Imagine that you have some sort of form that your users need to fill out in your experience. They enter, you know, all, like, just, you know, maybe like 10 different fields of information, lots of text. They accidentally click the start button or accidentally navigate away from that page after spending all that time filling it in. And they go back, if the information is gone, they're clearly not going to be very happy. So one way, and this again is a very trivial example, to handle this is we're going to override onNavigated to and onNavigated from those methods, and I'm going to, let's just take a look at it. We'll just go ahead and look at the specific details using snippets again. So I have, I'm just going to pop them in and then we'll talk about them. So I have an onNavigated from method that I've overridden. And what I'm doing is I'm accessing isolated storage and I'm creating this text file. I'm writing to the text file the information in that page that I want to preserve for users. It's pretty straightforward. When I navigate back to that page, I'm again accessing isolated storage, grabbing that text file that I've created previously, and then I'm repopulating the information on that page for users. You're going to probably, in many cases, want to take it a lot deeper. Again, this is a very high-level, trivial example, but it is important that you consider, you know, preserving the state of information in your experiences so that your users are really happy. Let me just go ahead and save this. I'm not going to run it. Actually, I will. I'll just do it real quick, just so we can look at it. We have time. I'll move through the last one very quickly. Okay. Oops. The images will load, hopefully. All right, so I'm working. I decide I want to send a note to this person. Maybe I accidentally hit the back button a couple of times. I go back. I'm happy. Let's say I entered a lot of text. My information's still there. I can just simply submit the comment, and I'm good to go. I don't have to type it in again. Again, a trivial example, but it is important to consider in your experiences. So the last point, the last best practice that we're going to talk about today is leveraging the full power of live tiles. In Mango, you can really make the tiles, the start page tiles, exciting for users. You can add, like, you know, like some late breaking news type information to a tile. In our case, in our weather application, let's take a look at the current state of our tile. So I'm going to go back to the start page. I'm going to pin this application to the start page. As you'll see, this tile does nothing. It's a weather application. It would be potentially interesting to provide the latest weather data to users so they don't have to open the application. Maybe they don't want to see alerts, you know, for the area. Maybe they don't want to look at images. They just want to know what the temperature and weather is like today. You could present that information on a live tile. It's very easy to do. So let's take a look at how you can do that. And this time it will be in Visual Studio again. So to do that, I'm going to open mainpage.xaml.cs, and I'm going to go to the method. This is the method that loads the weather data. Below that method, I'm going to add an update tile method that I've created, and we'll talk about it in a moment. And in the method that actually loads the data, I'm going to call that update tile method. So I'm going to call the update tile method with the current, the today's weather description, as well as the current temperature. I have that information in my data set. When I go to update tile, you'll see it's taking the description and the temperature. It's looking for the shell tile, the first one for my application. If it doesn't find it, it's going to return. If it does find it, it's going to create the tile data information that I'm going to need, and I can write the title to the back of the tile. I'm writing Seattle. If I were actually hooked up to GPS, it would be Barcelona. I'm not. I'm hard coding all of this information. And then I'm writing the back content. The weather is, I'm taking that description and putting it into the tile as well as the temperature. So let's go ahead and run our application and just take a look at the, it really is a lot more exciting. And it's a lot more useful. So you definitely want to take advantage of things like this. One thing to consider, all right, it's going to load here in a minute. I'll let it load before I continue. I want the data to load so that it will show up on the tile. Okay. So now we're looking at the tile. You know, I may be looking at a couple of applications on my start page, and the tile flips over, and I instantly see it's 42 degrees and clear in Seattle. I don't need to open the application. I'm happy. I have the information that I need as a user. You can take this further. This, again, was a very simple example just to highlight the user experience aspects of live tiles. You can take it further by leveraging background agents. Maybe you want to run code in the background, maybe every 30 minutes. That accesses the latest weather information, so you're constantly updating that tile. That's another thing that you could look at. And there are blogs that I can recommend that you check out for more details. So those are all of the best practices that I have. I don't know if there are any questions, if you want to help me with questions, maybe. Are there any questions before we move into build? Oh, good question.
Could we repeat the question? Oh, so the question is, what if you try to deep link to screen or state that doesn't exist anymore?
I think you need to really think about the scenario, and you need to make sure that doesn't happen. If it is a case where the information might not be present anymore, and I'm having trouble thinking of a specific scenario. Mm-hmm. Oh, to the latest weather for today, maybe? Oh. Oh, if I deleted the person. Oh, right. Very, very good point. I haven't actually thought about those particular scenarios. I mean, we could take a look at it on the phone. I imagine if you delete that person.
It just won't go there.
Yeah, it just.
It will go to the previous state.
I'm actually not sure what it does. I need to look into that. I have to apologize. I'm not sure. And I really haven't thought about what I would recommend for how to manage that either. I need to think more about that. Thank you. So any other questions? We can move on to build, and I'll build an application or a version of what we just saw from start to finish in Blend. Shall we just go ahead and do that? Yeah?
25 minutes for that.
25 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, I think I can get pretty far, and then we can finish up after lunch. I'll see where I can go. So I'm going to close all of these. Just give me a minute to set up. All right. So. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and get started. Again, I'm going to use Expression Blend to create the application from start to finish. It's really going to be in prototype form, so we're going to use sample data. I'm going to do some data templating. We're going to kind of target the same experience that we just saw in a more prototype form. I was accessing live data. I took it a little bit further before. We're not going to do that. So you can see some of the great functionality that you'll find in Blend that you'll want to take advantage of for your prototyping and final application development experiences. So this is what you see when you first launch Blend, and I'm just going to select New Project. And I have a series of Windows Phone project templates available to me. I have an empty Windows Phone application, a Windows Phone data-bound application, which provides sample data and shows you how to potentially do page navigation. So it'll present a list of information. When I click on an item, it will navigate me to a new page. Something that you could use, maybe some designers in the audience, when you want to explore ways of doing page navigation. There are behaviors for that as well. I'll show you that later, though. There's also a panorama application. You want to create a panorama experience, you could start with the panorama application. It includes sample data. You may not want that, but it's really good to look at. It's a great representative example to learn from. There is also a Windows Phone Pivot application that will allow you to get started building a pivot experience right away. And then there's a control library so that you can, you know, have some encapsulated code that you might run. And then you could even create a Sketchflow application. Something that might be interesting when you are doing early prototyping so that you're not really focused on the visual appearance of these applications. Something to consider. I'm going to start with the Windows Phone application, the empty project template, just because I think it's easier. I don't have to pull out the sample data that is already included. I can add my own. So that's what I'm going to do. So the next thing I'm going to do, because I do want this to be a panorama, as we saw, I'm going to delete all of the information that's already contained in this page that I have, and I'm going to add the panorama control. So delete the title panel using my Objects and Timeline tool window. I'm going to delete the content panel, which is a grid. Now I have my layout route. And this is where I want to add my panorama. So I'm going to search for panorama in the asset library. I have panorama here. I'm going to double click on panorama to add it to my page. Then I'm going to right click on it because I want it to fill the available space. I'm going to choose auto size fill via the context menu. And I'm going to go to my properties window to make sure that it actually is filling all of the available space. It's not, so I'm going to do a split view so I can look at the XAML to see what I have. So my problem lies here. I'm going to first turn off the system tray. As I mentioned, we recommend that you don't have the system tray on with panoramas. So I'm going to make it false by simply typing that in. I don't want it. I want to adhere to the recommendation. It is orienting only portrait-wise, which is exactly what I want. I could choose to support both portrait and landscape. Portrait, again, is what we recommend for panoramas, so I'm going to leave it as is. The next thing that I'm going to do is, actually, I think I have it in the state that I want now. Oh, I see the problem. I'm going to delete this. I had rows in my grid specified, so I'm going to delete that XAML that was specifying additional grid rows because I don't need that. I need one grid, no rows, that I can place the entire panorama in. So now I have everything looking exactly as I want. And as we can see, the panorama is filling the entire available space. So the next thing I'm going to do, maximize my view, and I'm going to name my panorama. Sorry. All caps, I'm going over to the properties panel and I can modify the title property for my panorama. That's what I'm doing. I'm typing Weather Watch, which is the name of the application that I want. I have that in place. I have two panorama items in here. I'm going to double click on the first panorama item and I'm going to name it Weather. Just so I know what this panorama item is when I look at the Objects and Timeline tool window, just to make it easier for me to understand what I have. I'm going to call the next one Alerts Pano. The next thing I'm going to do is remove the grid because I don't need it. And as you saw in my application, I didn't have a title for each pano or panorama item. So I'm going to remove the title. Again, I'm going over to the Properties tool window and I'm selecting the header. That's the property that I want to change and I'm simply deleting it. So now I have a good foundation from which to build the application that you saw previously. Now I'm going to work on sample data. I'm going to create sample data for the weather information and sample data for the alert information. I'm not going to do the images because I want to move a little bit more quickly so that we can make sure you guys get to lunch on time. And I want to get this part done before everybody goes to lunch. So we have a data tab in Blend that you can access to create your sample data. And this is where I'm going to do that. And you'll see that there is this Create Sample Data button up in the data tab. That's what I'm going to use. There are other options. This is the one that's most interesting for us. I'm going to click on it. I don't want to import sample data. I don't want to create sample data from a class. I think I'm going to take just the most simple and straightforward route right now, and I'm just going to create a new sample data set from scratch. I'm going to call this weather data. And then I'm going to create one more called alert data. And now I'm going to modify the information in each of these sample data sets, starting with our, I'll go ahead and start with our alert data. I have a collection. There are two items in this collection right now. I want to add a string for title, the title of the alert, and a string for the description for the alert. So I want these both to be strings. If I click over on the button at the far right, I can specify whether it's a string or not. So for the title, I want a string of length 1. So I'll make it length 1. I will make it max out at 12 characters. I'm going to go ahead and name this title. And I hit enter. This next one, I'm clicking twice on the title for that data set item to make it active so that I can edit it. And now I'm just going to type description, almost. And I also want this to be a string, so I'm going to make it a string. I want this to be of length, let's say 100. I want up to 100 characters in there, or words in there, and the words can be 8 characters long. I think that's fine. The next thing I want to do is control the number of items in the data set that's generated. I want the max to be 10 is fine. I'm going to leave it at 10. It's specified down here. That's totally fine. Close my collection, and now I'm going to work. I have that in the state that I want it, and now I'm going to work on my weather data set. Again, I have a collection with two items. The first one I want to be the current or the weather details or the weather information. I want that to be a string. I want the word length to be 1 and the max character count to be 12. This is going to be called weather description. The next item I want is the day of the week. I want it also to be a string of one word length. 8 characters is fine. We'll call this day. Then I'm going to add 2 more numerical values for the hot, for the high and the low temperatures. Clicking on the plus button, we'll call this one high. I'm going to make it a number of length 2. That's perfect. I'm going to add a low. And this also needs to be a number of length 2. So I have my 2 data sets ready to go. And we can start actually building the user experience for our application. To do that, I'm going to start with my weather panorama item. I've selected it over in the object and timeline tool window. And I'm going to grab my collection from the data window for weather data. And I'm just going to drag and drop it into the panorama. And it didn't go where I wanted to, so I'm going to go back over to the objects and timeline tool window. And I'm going to drag it into my weather panorama item. So now it's in place. I want to have it fill the available space. So I'm going to choose auto size by right-clicking on the list box, fill. Now it's filling all of the available space almost. What do I have going on here? I'm going to take a look at the XAML to troubleshoot. Oh, we'll fix that later. All right, I'm going to go full screen again. Let's go to our alerts panorama, back to our data tab, and let's grab our alerts collection and drag and drop that onto our alerts panel. Again, it didn't go in, so I'm going to move it into our alerts panorama item, right-click on it, and have it auto-size to fill all of the available space. And I just noticed I made a mistake in the panorama here. I didn't drag my weather collection, so I'm going to go back to my data panel and drag my weather collection over into my list box there. Okay, now I have things looking close to what I want. Not quite there, but getting there definitely. So I want to style this information to get it looking similar to what we saw in the application we saw a moment ago. So to do that, a data template was generated for me when I dragged that data set into the UI and it created a list box. So I'm going to right-click on that list box. I'm going to choose Edit Additional Templates. I'm going to edit the generated item template again as we saw previously. This time I'm going to fully design that particular item template. And I'm going to do split view for a moment to make sure I have all of my items in the proper order. And I can see that by looking at the bindings for the items. So this is my weather description. I want that at the top. So I could copy and paste it, or I could drag it to the top in the objects and timeline tool window. I'm going to go ahead and do that. It's a little bit easier. And so I have my day information next. Then I have high and low. I actually want these two reversed, so I'm going to grab my low and drag it to the location that I want in the hierarchy in the tree. So now I'll go ahead and start with the weather description. Let's just make it look similar to what we saw previously. I'm going back to my properties panel so that I can edit the properties for that item. And I will go ahead and maximize the view. I'm going to leverage those theme.resources as much as I can as well. As you'll see, there will be certain cases where I don't. But the first thing I want to do is I'm going to select all of my text, and I'm going to bind to the system resource font family semi-light. So all my fonts are semi-light. I'm going to select that weather description information, and I'm going to try, let's go with font size huge, because that's too big. I don't want that system style. Let's try extra, extra large. It's a little too small for me, so I am going to custom size this information. Again, I'm going to click on the little square that you saw there. I'm going to convert to a local value, and I'm going to set it to 65 manually. 75. Okay, so I think I have it around the right size that I wanted. And let's go ahead and style the day and the high and low temperature so that it maps to what we saw previously. One last thing with our title, let's bind the color to the system color for the system accent color. So I went over to the brushes, selected the brush resources, and simply selected the phone accent brush, and now it's bound. So that if I go to my device tab and I select magenta, you'll see that it's changing. I think that's the effect that I want. So, okay, now let's set the size for our day to phone font size large. And we'll set the high and the low temperature to phone font size normal. I want, as you saw, the high and the low to have a little degree symbol, a little slash between the two, and to run horizontally. So I'm going to group them into a stack panel that's aligned horizontally. I select those two text blocks to do that and right click and say group into stack panel. They're still oriented vertically, so what I'm going to do is go over to the property grid and choose horizontal. Now they're oriented horizontally. Let's zoom in so we can see things a little bit better. Okay, so I have things looking close to what I want. I'm going to go into split view for a moment. I'm going to control click to duplicate this text block to create the little degree symbol. I'm going to select the text element. I could do it in the property grid. I could convert to local value and enter a 0. Actually, I want an O. And then I think I'm going to convert the size of it to a local value as well, and we'll make it 10. I'm going to drag and drop it into the proper position after the low temperature. And then I'm going to control, click, and drag to duplicate it so that it sits to the right of the high temperature. It's getting close to what we want. Okay, one more control, clicking, and duplication that we're going to look at here. I'm going to duplicate the low temperature just so that I can use it as the base for my slash symbol. I'm going to change the text to a local value and enter the slash symbol. So it's looking very close to what we're targeting. Now I want to add that vertical line that we saw in the prototype application earlier. I'm going to select the day text block and the stack panel that contains our high and our low temperature, and I'm going to group those into another stack panel. I want this one to also orient horizontally, so I'm going to go over to my property panel and select horizontal. Actually, that's not right. I'm going to do one more grouping. I want these to run vertically, and so I'm going to group them into a stack panel, let them run vertically. This stack panel, I do want to orient horizontally. And into this stack panel, I'm going to add that line. It's going to be a border just to create that visual element. I'm going to double click after selecting my stack panel, and then I'm going to drag it up above the stack panel that contains the day and the high and the low temperature. Let's go ahead and style that stack panel. Let's make the border brush phone foreground brush. Let's do the same very quickly with all of our text blocks. Let's bind them to the phone foreground color, which is right here. Everything's bound properly. Back to our border, let's set the height to 50 in the property grid. And that's not the height, this is the height to 50, and the width to 2. Let's get rid of the border everywhere but on the left. So I'm going to set the border width everywhere but on the left to 0. And then I'm going to add a margin to the right of that line that I've just created, just to give it a little space from the textual information. I think I'm going to make it 12. And one last thing, I'm going to move the high and the low temperature up a little bit closer to the day information. I'm going to give it a negative margin to do that, just to make it look a little bit nicer. And then grab all of that information. Actually, I'm going to grab the border, and I'm going to move it down just a little bit so the alignment's a little nicer. So I'm just doing some visual tweaking to make things look like I like. It's definitely headed in the right direction. And next, I want to align that information as you saw in the application over to the right. So let's go ahead and do that. First, I'm going to, on this entire data template, I'm going to give it a left margin of 6, just to give it a little more space over there. And I'm also going to make the width 400. I'm just dragging it to make it 400, and then I'm looking at the width value to make it sure it's 400. I could have just entered it as well to get the right value. Then I'm going to grab my stack panel that we've just edited and styled to look the way that we want, and I'm going to align it to the left, and then I'm going to give it a left margin of 250 to get it positioned where we want, how it looked in that application. Next, I'm going to give it a negative margin of 12 to move it a little closer to the weather description information. Now, as I zoom out, you'll see it's looking very close to what we wanted. Let's do a very quick styling on the alerts information. I clicked this list box right here to step back up out of the data template. You can do the same just for quick and easy navigation. I'm selecting my alerts list box now, and let's style the generated data template. Edit current. And again, I'm going to do split view just so I know what I'm working on. Titles at the bottom. I'm going to select title and move it up. I want the title to be, let's maximize this view. I want the title to be bound to phone font size large. I also want the color. I'm going to bind it to the accent color. Bind it to the accent color. I want that two columns of information, so I'm going to set the width to roughly 180, getting prepared for two columns of information. Going over to the width details and typing in, I'm going to do 184. Type in 184. Just a couple more tweaks, give it a negative margin on the details text. I'm going to make the details text phone font size semi-light. And I will set the font size to the system resource font size normal. And the last thing I want to do, you saw that in the application we showed a lot more information. To do that, I need to set word wrapping appropriately. Right now it's not wrapping, I want it to wrap. So to find that property in the property panel, I'm just going to type wrap in the search box. And as you can see, text wrapping is set to no wrap. I want it to set to wrap. We have a lot of text in there, so I need to control the size of that information. I'm going to set the height on that text block after clearing out my search to a height of, let's say 188. Okay, it's getting much closer to what we want. Last thing I want to do before adding my wrap panel to create the two columns of information is I want to set a bottom margin of 16, just to get a little bit more spacing between each alert set of alert information. Getting closer, so let's again step back up out of the data template by clicking on this item right here that says list box. Takes me back up. I'm going to edit the items panel, edit additional templates, items panel. I'm going to create empty. I will go ahead and put it in application. I'm going to name it just simply items panel. I'm going to do split view so you can see what we have. By default, it is giving us this items panel with a stack panel. I don't want a stack panel. I want it to be the wrap panel. So I delete the stack panel. I'm going to go over to my items here, and I'm going to type wrap. panel. Okay, I do not have a reference to the toolkit yet. That's why I can't find my wrap panel. So I'm going to really quickly add a reference to the toolkit and then rebuild and then run through the step again. So you'll need to do the exact same. So I think this will be good. First of all, I'm going to undo the deletion of the stack panel. Save. I'm going to go over to my project tab and I'm going to right click on the project and I'm going to say add a reference. So now what I need to do is navigate to, where is my computer? Navigate to the Windows Phone SDK. This is folder and Windows Phone 7.1 toolkit. I have the August 11 toolkit. Going into the bin directory, and I'm just going to double click on the toolkit. So now I have a reference. I need to rebuild my project to gain access to it. So build succeeded. Now let's redo that step. Let's delete our stack panel. And there's our wrap panel. So now I have access to it. I'm just going to double click to pop the wrap panel in place, as you see. Let's put the items closer together. So the wrap panel's in place. We have our two columns of information. Things are looking good. One last tweak before we move on to lunch, because it is lunchtime. I'm going to go into the item template, and I'm going to give it a little bit more of a buffer on the right, just so more space, because now I have two columns of information. I'm going to select the topmost stack panel, go over to my margin, and I'm going to give it a margin of, let's say, I'm going to make it bigger. I'm going to play with it here a little bit, see how big I can make it. All right, I think that's definitely looking good. I also want a margin of 12 on the left, which ruined my stack panel. Okay, I'm going to do just a little bit of playing here to get things to visually align correctly. Forgive me. Okay, so now things are looking good. I really have my application close to the state that we saw earlier in the prototype that we looked at during the refine session. So I think, should we stop now or... I think it's good, yeah. I think it's definitely good. We're making progress. Let's just run it real quickly so you can see the current state, because it's getting close. We still have work to do. We have pages to add, transitions to add. We want to style that opening animation and the start page tile. There are several other things that we want to do, but we're in a good state. So you can see the splash screen doesn't look necessarily nice. We want to fix that. I also want to fix the alignment. There's a lot of space up at the top and use the grid system to totally like make things like align nicely to a grid. But overall, it's getting there. So we're headed in the right direction. So, okay, I'm going to stop now. Let me tell you what I've done while everybody's been out because I had a lot to cover. There are some things that I want to make sure you guys see. So I went ahead and, first of all, I added an alerts details page and I bound all of the information to the data set, the sample data set that we've already created. Behind the scenes, I also added those page transitions using the toolkit that we saw earlier, as well as the tilt effect when you click on an item in the alerts list to alert the user, to let the user know that that item is actionable and will navigate them to a new page. What else have I done? So I'm going to turn the grid on real quick. I did a bit of grid alignment while you guys were out as well, just to make sure everything was aligning nicely with the grid. I have this locked to the degree that made me happy. We saw this before, so I didn't think it was necessary to go over again. Would have been nice, but there's just not enough time. So everything's aligned nicely. That's what I did while everybody was out. So what I want to do now is I quickly want to show you just a little bit about creating custom animations. I had that startup screen animation, so I'm going to show you how to create it, show you some, like the value of easing effects. I'm going to show how to customize the splash screen as well as creating a tile icon. And I may ask Arturo to help me with that because he's amazing. So let's go ahead and get started. with creating the custom animation that we saw in the prototype earlier. I'm going to turn my grid off. Actually, I'm just going to delete the grid system. We don't need it anymore. Everything's looking nice. So what I'm going to do, I'm just going to lock my panorama because I don't need to mess with it anymore, and I don't want anything to move while I'm adding additional elements, and Blend makes that very easy to do. Nothing will be affected if I lock that item. Select my layout root grid, and I'm going to add a grid. Select grid from the toolbox here, double click, it's added to the layout root grid, and I want this to auto size to fill the entire space. Auto size fill, just as we've done before. I want the background to be black, and actually I'm going to bind it to the system color. Background, the foam background brush, and it's filling all the space as you can see. The next thing I'm going to do, if you recall, it said weather watch and it kind of animated out. We're just going to duplicate that real quickly just to give you an example of what you can do and talk a little bit about animations. So in this grid, I'm going to add a pop-up. Let's just go ahead and put it in a pop-up now. I'm going to go to my assets and I'm going to type pop-up. I see the pop-up control here. Add my pop-up. I want to do a little bit of reworking of information. I want my grid inside of this pop-up. Again, everything's filling all of the available space, as you can see. Again, I have it in a pop-up so that I can hide it and you don't see it when you click the back button when you navigate deeper into your application, just as we discussed in the best practices. That's why I'm doing this. The grid is where I'm going to place those animated elements. And it's going to be two text blocks, so I'm going to go ahead and add two text blocks now to the grid within the pop-up. I'm just going to double-click on the text block item over in the toolbox to add those two elements. The first text block, actually I want the grid. I want these text blocks actually to sit inside of, let's go ahead and make it a grid. We will auto-size this grid. I'm going to align it center, and I'm going to just move the bottom text block down a little bit manually. I just simply hit the V key. I like keyboard shortcuts. I hit the V key on my keyboard, and then I can hit the down arrow key to move the second text block down. So that's what I've done. Let's go ahead and increase the font size here, starting with the first text block. I'm going to make the font size extra large. That's not big enough. I'm going to manually tweak the font size. Convert it to a local value, and I'm going to set the size at 75. Still not what I want. Let's go with 100. Not that big. Let's go with 100. Okay, so it's looking closer to what I want. I don't want this text block to wrap. So I'm going to turn wrapping off. I'm going to go to the search box and type W so that I can get text wrapping property to appear. I'm going to hit no wrap. It's not wrapping. The next thing I want to do is clear that search box so that I can see all of my properties again. And I'm going to set the size on the second text block to 50. Again, I'm going to select that text block, hit the V key on my keyboard, and arrow down to give it a little bit more space from the top element. I'm also going to arrow over to the left because I want it to align a little bit more left. I'm just doing this all kind of ad hoc and manually. Select my first text block. Again, I hit the V key. I'm going to kind of align it a little bit off screen and to the left. And the last thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to convert my grid. I just decided right now that I want a canvas instead of, actually I grouped my grid into a canvas. I want a canvas for that element instead of a grid. So I'm going to change my layout type to a canvas. I actually like the position where it moved it, so I'm going to go ahead and leave it there, and I'm going to change the text to weather watch, as you saw in the previous application. Select my text block. I can do it on the design surface or in the objects and timeline tool window. I'm going to go ahead and type weather. In all caps, hit tab. I'm going to select my second text block, and I'm going to write watch. I just change it up a little bit. I'm going to make it lowercase. Clearly, it needs to be a little bit bigger. I'll make it 80. Bump weather up a little bit. Make it a little bit bigger. Yeah, I think that's good. I think I am going to, what did I do there? Change the font face a little bit. I'm going to use the system resources. I'm going to change it to semi-light. I'm going to do that top block in, let's go ahead and make it semi-bold. Again, I want it to be a little bit bigger. So I want it to be 120. I'm going to, again, select the lower text block, and I'm just going to hit the V key and position it a little closer to the weather text block. Okay, now I'm going to do the animation. I kind of have it looking like I want. The only information that the user is actually going to see is the stuff that's in the black portion of the screen within the, you know, the telephone mock-up that you see on the screen here. The other stuff is just showing me what I have in the element that I have on within the visual tree for my informational purposes. Okay, so now what I do is I go to the Objects and Timeline Tool window, and I click on the plus sign, and you'll see the new tooltip. I'm going to create a new storyboard. I'm just going to call it opening. So I have a new storyboard in place, and now I'm going to set up the animations. Let's give me just a little bit more visibility into my animation canvas. So I'm going to go ahead and select these two text blocks, and I'm going to create a keyframe at 0.5 seconds. For both of them. Next, I'm going to move a little, like 1.25 seconds out, and I'm going to create another keyframe for the top text block. For the bottom text block, I think I'll move in just slightly and create another keyframe at 1 second. At the end of the last keyframe for the top text block, I'm going to zoom out a little bit just so I can see have a little bit more workspace to work with. So I'm going to select that text block. Actually, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to hit the V key after selecting it in the Objects and Timeline Tool window, and then I'm going to use the arrow key to move it off screen, because that's where I want it to animate, is off screen. Okay. Next, I'm going to select the bottom text block, and I want it to animate off to the right. Again, I'm going to select it, go to its last keyframe, which is at 1 second, hit the V key, and I'm going to move it off to the right using the right arrow key. Okay. The last thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to animate the background on the grid that is in the pop-up. I'm going to create a keyframe at 1 second. I'm going to create another keyframe at roughly 1.35 seconds. At 1.35 seconds, I want the opacity to be 0 on my grid. So that goes from 100% opaque to, not opaque at all to 100% opaque. Actually, it's quite the opposite. So that you can see the information underneath. That's what I'm trying to do. So let's step back and just preview our animation. I hit the Go to First Frame button in our Objects and Timeline Tool window, and I'm going to hit the Play button just to see how our animation works. It's nice. One thing I want to do is just make it a little bit more exciting. So I'm going to add easing effects to the last keyframe in each of the text blocks portions of the animation to make it a little bit more visually interesting. And you can definitely take advantage of this. I highly encourage it. I'm going to select the last keyframe. And you have these easing functions that you can leverage. I think I'm going to have it go from fast to slow. I'm going to use the circle easing function. I'm going to do the same thing for the second text block. I'm just selecting the keyframe for that text block. Then going over to the properties window, and I'm selecting the appropriate easing function. Now let's go ahead and step back and preview our animation. I like that a little bit better. Okay, so now I'm gonna go and I'm gonna hook this up in code so that we can actually see it running in our project. I'm going to step out of the animation using the X key and the Object and Timeline tool window, give myself a little more space, bump up the size of the viewing area, and now I'm going to go to the CS file for my main page.xaml. I'm just gonna do a few things here. I'm gonna add a loaded event. And in the loaded event, I'm going to delete this event because I only want it to run once. So I'm just going to duplicate the event that I created and delete it. Negative equals, minus equals. In this event, before I delete the event, I'm going to call my animation, which is opening, I believe. Let me double check. Opening. I'm going to tell it to begin. And then I'm going to add a completed event for this animation. .completed, because I want to hide the pop-up as you saw previously in the refine session after the animation is completed. And my pop-up doesn't have a name right now, so I'm going to give it a name. I'll go ahead and name it pop like I did before. Don't know why I like that. And so I'm going to reference that now in code. Is open, I'm just going to set after the animation completes, its visibility, it's open to false. And yep, that's exactly what I want. One last thing I just want to verify that I've done. I want to bind all of these colors to the system colors. I think I did the background color. I want to bind, where's the foreground brush? The text to the foreground brush, the grid background is bound to the background brush. That's exactly what I want. Let's go ahead and run it, and we'll see that something happened. Clean and rebuild. Not uppercase. That's the problem that I had. So now I'm going to hit F5 and we'll take a look at our experience. And after the splash screen appears, you don't see the animation. I know what the problem is. I need to set my pop-up to is open equals true by default. That's why we didn't see the animation. So back to mainpage.xaml, I'm going to select the pop-up and I'm going to look for is open property, and I'm going to go ahead and set it to true using my properties panel, and I just simply searched for that property. Go ahead and clear it out. I'm going to run my application again, and things should work as expected, similar to what we saw in the refine session. There you go. All right, so the next thing I want to do really quickly, I think this is the last thing I'll do. I may ask Arturo to come up super fast and do us some animation, you know, some tile icons. We'll see. Let me run this one more time. When you use our project templates, you get this splash screen by default. You want to customize it, so that's what we're going to do real quick, is customize the splash screen. And to do that, I'm going to make this really simple. I'm going to utilize some of the new functionality in the emulator. There are cool accelerometer features you'll definitely want to check out, you know, so you can test, like maybe you have a marble game or something and you don't want to actually deploy it to your phone to test your marble game. Well, you can, I mean, as you can see, you can probably play with the marble, you know, like trying to get the marble in a hole or whatnot using the accelerometer features. There's also new GPS functionality. So in the case of Meal Nirvana, we were using GPS data to identify restaurants near your current location. Maybe you need to test certain aspects of that functionality, and you can use the emulator's new GPS functionality or location functionality. We're going to use the screenshot functionality, and to get the screenshot that I want, I am going to go back to mainpage.xaml, and for just a moment, I'm going to comment out my animation, because I want to capture a screenshot before the animation happens, and I'm going to use that as my splash screen. So I will comment it out as I've done, and just run my application again. All right, it's looking great, and one last thing I need to do. You need to capture your screenshots using the emulator at 100%. So I'm going to need to change the size of my emulator to 100%. I know it's off screen for you guys, but it's actually going to create the appropriate screenshot that I can use in the splash screen. So I'm on my screenshot now, and I'm just going to hit capture. This is what I'm going to use for my splash screen. Let me go ahead and save it. I'm going to save it to my desktop because it's a PNG right now and I need a JPEG. I'm just going to call it 1. Then I'm going to open it up in MS Paint and I'm going to convert it to a JPEG. File, open, 1. Go ahead and save as JPEG. And I believe it's called Splash Screen Image. Splash Screen Image. Yes. Close Paint. Close the screenshot tool. I hit the wrong button. Go back to 75% so we can see the entire emulator. Close that again. Okay. So now I'm just going to simply copy and paste this new splash screen that I've created into my project. And I believe this is the project that we're currently working on. Copy and replace. And go back to Blend. Let's go ahead and look at something a little bit more interesting. Oh, first of all, I need to uncomment the commented out opening animation. Again, go back to something a little more interesting. Now I'm going to run my application, and it's just going to feel a little bit more seamless and held together, a little bit more holistic, a nicer experience than having the default splash screen that you get when you use our project templates. Arturo, should we move on, or do you want to create an icon for us? All right. Yeah, I definitely agree. So I actually did a short little Channel 9 video for Silverlight TV on creating icons that using images that you trace in expression design. You guys might want to check it out. Just one method that you could use to quickly create icons that jive with the overall Metro design language. Something to consider. You don't have to do that. You could definitely hire a designer if you're a developer or just, you know, work on your own. There are many different options. I'm done. Are there any quick questions about what we've seen in terms of build? If not, you know, feel free to come up to me and talk to me, and we'll have Ricky and Plain Concepts come up because they have some super awesome stuff. So thank you, everybody.